Welcome to Let's Talk. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners across the country where the program's broadcast, particularly the local traditional owners, the Jagera, Yagera, Turrbal and Yugalpil peoples, the Yugambeh, Mananjali, Kombamiri, Noonuckle, Quandamooka peoples. I'd also like to acknowledge elders, elders of the First Peoples of the land, and elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to each and every one of you. And welcome to all our listeners, tuned in across the country by the National Indigenous Radio Service and across the world by the World Wide Web. Welcome to you. It's great to have your company. Well, a little more rain overnight, and they're saying we'll get a few showers and maybe a few storms over Easter. Isn't it good? We got a short week this week and a short week next week. It's the period of public holidays. I think we've got a few Anzac days coming up and something else will come up again after that. But it's great for the Easter break. Let's hope you all have a great one, whatever you may do. See on the front page of today's paper, photo of cotton at Cubby Station. They're rejoicing because there's a sea of white out there. Cotton's being picked. And as I grew up on the Dawson River, up in Theodore there in the Dawson Valley, it was one of two cotton producing areas in Queensland in those days. There's a few more around, they spread out, but because of the water and the irrigation system set up in the Dawson and Callide Valleys, they were growing cotton back in the 50s. Used to do a bit of chipping cotton and picking cotton. The old man actually run over me with a disc plough. I went underneath a disc plough, towed by a little old grey Fergie tractor, a kerosene Ferguson tractor. TE20, I think it might have been. Dragging a disc plough. And I went under it. I was almost four-year-old. Probably one of the only survivors of a... one of the only fellows that can say they've been under a disc plough and come out the other side. I was cut up. My dad was cut up when he looked back and saw me half ploughed under. But yeah, I can still see it as clearly as the day it happened, how I did it and what happened. But I'll never forget cotton whenever I see cotton, especially that plant, the cotton plant. Whenever I see cotton growing and being hauled, and that, my mind goes back to that old disc plough that went clean over top of me. Almost cut off both feet and one leg. But anyway, let's get on with the show. It's not about me talking about being run over by a disc plough. My guest today, First Nations woman Gail Munn, joins me by telephone. Gail, welcome to the program. How are you?
Oh, thank you, Tiger. I'm well. And I'd just like to acknowledge the traditional owners too of the land on which this broadcast is spread.
Good. Tell us your mob, your country.
Oh, my country is Goongari country. I was born in Roma but grew up on the Mitchell Yumba until I was about 12. So, that's my country. Still love going out to that part. Still have strong connections out there, even though I've lived in Ipswich for about 40 years. And, so my journey's been a big one. But as I say, still have connections. Go back whenever I can, whenever I get the opportunity.
Now, the Yumba is the term for where Murray's camped. They're their housing estate, shall we say.
Yeah, the Murray housing estate that was across the river, you know, the other side of the river. that's what that was. Yeah.
What was the state of housing? What was the houses look like? What were people living in?
Well, they weren't very good. You know, like I mean, my grandmother, where we lived, there was two rooms. You know, one was the kitchen and the eating place, and then there was a big sort of like bough shed and a shed down the back, and one bedroom that everybody slept in. So it was. Interesting times, but good times,
yeah.
You know.
Dirt floors? Yeah.
Sorry?
Dirt floors?
No. There was dirt floors downstairs, but we did actually have, board floors upstairs.
You was in a flash place. You had upstairs, downstairs, and...
We're flash.
You were in
flash
a flash
Murray.
Place. Yeah, deadly. All right. But other houses there, where people... lived?
Most of the people who lived around there, you know, like I was related to by blood anyway, you know, it was just like our little group that lived there. There were several different families that lived all around there, as I said, all of whom I were related to. And, you know, we had the freedom to just roam mm-hmm. everywhere that we liked, but there were certain areas where we were told not to go that we couldn't go, which we didn't. And I'll get to that a little bit later on in the story, you know, about the energy that's sort of like still stuck on the land that we can't sort of cross over into those places, yeah.
What were some of the sad experiences for you, or some of the not-so-happy memories? I mean, growing up in that environment is just great. The freedom to go bush and to wander, to play, to roam, you know, that sort of stuff. But you did have the responsibility to go to school. Your parents sent you to school.
Yeah, yeah, we went to school. And but, yeah, like on the Yumba, yeah, everything wasn't sort of sometimes we paint these really idyllic pictures, but they weren't always like that, you know. There was the normal things, you know. Violence, alcohol, that type of thing was there even when I was growing up, you know, in the 50s. So, yeah, so that it's not to say that, you know, there was this whole idyllic situation, nothing bad ever happened. The things did, but, you know, as I've grown and learned, you understand the deep-seated reasons behind all those things that happened there. But, yeah, we were sent to school, and then when I was about 12, we left there, and went to live in Charleville for a time, and then went to live in Quilpie. And from Quilpie, I think we moved there when I was about 12.
How far would Quilpie to Charleville be?
God, it's getting out west. I'm not really sure. I was just out there
couple
the other
hours
day.
Drive.
A few hours drive, I think.
Pardon?
From Quilpie to Charleville, about 2.5 hours
right,
drive.
Yep, so it's a few hundred K. Yeah. Yep. Okay.
Yeah, so.
And you went to high school over there?
Yeah, I went to high school at Charleville because there's no high school in Quilpie.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a bit of a challenge for me, you know, like after having the freedom to sort of virtually roam wherever you wanted to, and then being stuck in this really constrictive environment wasn't very good for me. So
it was a boarding situation, was it?
Yeah. So I took off anyway.
How long did you last?
Went to Brisbane.
How long did you last?
Well, only until the next day, until this cop came bashing on my door. And
but before you decided to bolt from the school, how long?
Oh, a couple of years,
yeah.
18 months
yeah.
or something,
yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Didn't do me any good, though. Mum and Dad just came and got me and made me board somewhere else, made me finish school, so
uh-huh.
didn't really do me any good.
You got
just
through
cost
high school.
Them a lot of money.
Yeah, you got through high school.
Yeah, got yeah. through, yeah.
Oh, good, good. All right. Now, you do work... healing work in different forms, I suppose, but you got a big interest in lateral healing. How did you get to this position where you saw there was a need? Did you do some study, do some training early in the, after high school? How did you get to this position now where you're concerned about lateral healing as a result of the lateral violence, I imagine, but healing and counselling and those sorts of things? How did you get into that?
Yeah, well, I just used to work for Telstra when it used to be Telecom a long time ago. And then I decided, you know, that when they became deregulated and all the jobs were going and everything, that there was something else that I wanted to do. So I took myself off and studied acupuncture and became really involved with the whole philosophy behind acupuncture, you know, and I related a lot of that type of healing to what I believed my own Indigenous beliefs were about my spirituality and healing. That is, you know, you can't do anything to one part of your body or to another person without it affecting something else. So it was around that spirituality that everything is connected. So I studied Taoist principles and then went on there to sort of study some Buddhist principles as well, the Buddhist philosophies. And all of that, it started to connect the dots with my own Aboriginal spirituality because it was a totally holistic form of treatment where it just didn't treat the condition or the disease. It treated the whole person. So that looked at, you know, like the social wellness, the emotional wellness, the spiritual wellness, as well as the physical wellness of the person. So that, to me, seemed to make much more sense. Now, since since I left, I haven't been practicing acupuncture since about, 1999, 2000, somewhere around that time. Then I went into, I tried to study psychology. I went in and started to do that for a part. And again, it felt like that constrictive, scientific, one viewpoint, and it didn't really explore and explain my own spiritual beliefs around, you know, like there being greater causes. It's mainly the mind and what's going on in the mind. And I know as people, you know, there's much more to us than just our minds. There's all those other aspects that I just spoke about. So from there, I left there, but went into doing some community work, and that was within prisons as an official visitor, and also with the Commission for Children. I was doing that like in tandem at the same time. And I used to get so frustrated with the system, you know, and felt so helpless most of the time within those systems where these other aspects of what makes up a person wasn't being addressed, you know. And it was like I looked at all of this as like all I'm doing here is making people comfortable for a time while they just continue to die inside, you know, because nobody's addressing those deeper issues that go inside. It's like it's all about behavioural change and working on the mind, but nobody was touching the soul or the spirit of the person, you know. And that's one thing that's really missing today in, I still feel, like it's coming in a lot more now, but that was missing at the time that I was working within those organisations. And that was noticeable as well, you know. I was a member of the Ipswich Social Justice Group for a time and sat on the Murray Court here in Ipswich. That was for a while, and then I started training at Quatsuchet, which is now closed, as you know. So I was training over there for a while, so the things that I had going in Ipswich sort of had to stay. I just didn't have the time to do both, and travelling in and out of Brisbane every day made that really difficult. But, yeah, I brought what I could into the training as a trainer to, that more holistic concepts rather than just, you know, the mind and intellectual stuff, because there's many more dimensions to us than, as I said, just our mind. But that's very revered in today's society, you know, like it's sometimes it's how many pieces of paper you've got on the wall and what you've done to develop your mind. But and meanwhile, the heart and soul are still there, hurting, unhealed, and that's the area that I'm in.
All right. So with your working in corrections and Children's Commission and stuff like that, you said you could see that, you know, it wasn't getting to the root of the problem.
No. Yeah. So I'll just explain a little bit about why I became interested in lateral violence, you know.
Yes, please.
Like I've been guilty of it myself.
Tell us, define it for us first.
And okay. So lateral violence is a term that is and it's a form of bullying. But I'm just going to deal with it in the Indigenous context. Yep. I mean, it's out there in other places, but within the Indigenous context, I'll just deal with it there. So it's prevalent in all minority groups where they've lived in a dominant culture and where there's been a history of colonisation and oppression. So, and as everybody knows our history, like what that was. Mm. So when people are oppressed, you know, of course they still feel those feelings of frustration, anger, rage, all of those things, you know, and there's no outlet for these because they can't turn that on the oppressors, so they turn it inwards, so it stays inside. Now, all emotions are a form of energy and you can't keep it contained for very long, so it has to have an outlet. So when this stuff erupts, when these emotions erupt, it doesn't go to the oppressors. It comes out what we call sideways or laterally. And so we inflict it on our own people. And we hurt our own, we harm our own. And we do this in different ways. You know, when I say violence, it's not just physical violence. It's emotional violence, it's mental violence, it's sexual violence, it's it's all of those things that can fit under there, under that umbrella of bullying. You know, it's exclusion. It can be physical violence as well, but it covers the whole range of things.
Does it? Is it intergenerational, transgenerational?
Well, yes. Psychology calls it transgenerational, which goes from one generation to the next. Intergenerational, psychology says it comes down, you know, that can be several generations.
Right, yes.
In the way that I'll explain it in a metaphysical way, so, you know, and I'll paint a big picture there, it's like it's ancestral. So it can be passed down. So it's passed down from one generation to the next. Then it becomes environmental. So anybody growing up in that environment where there is that lateral violence, you know, where we fight with our own or we don't like this family or we don't like that organisation, and it's workplace as well.
So it can be quite subtle sort of stuff, can't it?
It is. Mm. It is. So, so Tiger, I just want to paint
yes.
a really big picture here for you at a moment. So it's energy. Our emotions are energy. They go in. So now at the point of conception, so whatever emotion, and emotions affect our cells. That's science is proving that. So what happens at our point of conception? We don't just get our physical characteristics from our parents. We also inherit the energy of those emotions that come through those cells. So there we are. We're sort of like behind the white, ball before we start. So we've inherited this stuff. We're bringing it into the world with us. Now, I just want to explain to you a little bit about energy. So I want you to think of it, you know, if you could think of a time when, you know, you might be walking on your land or somebody else's land or you go into a building and you can feel something in that building, you know, like it's like sometimes it'll feel like...
an energy or something, yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to be there, or it's a bit scary, or whatever that is, you know. You just don't want to be there. You know it's not safe. Or sometimes you might go somewhere and it feels almost like it's a sacred place and you have to whisper. And I don't know if you've ever had that experience, Tiger.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Okay, well, that's an energy imprint that's left from what has happened there before.
Mm.
Now, that could be, you know, like that it was a place where there were traditional practices. It could be a place where there were atrocities.
Yes.
It could be a place where there were gatherings, you know, but you can feel that energy imprint and you can get a sense of it. And you know instinctively whether you should be there or not. You know, you either move on or you go. Now, as a woman, I've had that experience, you know, that I can only assume was a men's area because I just knew I could not go any further into that.
Mm.
So that's because of the, you know, the forbidden, women were forbidden to go into those areas, and it's still very present there. Now, if you get, I'm just going to take that down now from the environment into people. Now, it's the same with people. People who feel humiliated, who feel betrayed and shame and guilt and all that stuff, powerlessness from the oppression, all of that energy that they're feeling with those emotions, it's got nowhere to go. So it goes inside their bodies and it imprints in their bodies. So, but what that energy does, if it's not released, yes, it comes out as this violence. But before it does that, it causes an emotional wound and a soul wound within the person, so that anybody who comes and says something, maybe that they don't like or whatever that is, what those words go immediately to that wound, and then the person retaliates. So, and as I said before, it's ancestral, it's handed down, or we take it on. And that's what psychology terms transgenerational trauma. In the energy healing field, it's just called social wounding, emotional wounding, spiritual wounding, soul wounding, and that's what it is. And that's the bit that people like myself work to get to the root of, to start to heal that and change that.
So people need to be able to, I suppose, I don't know, recognise or identify that's the issue. How is that dealt with within a Western framework? within a colonial perspective, going to a doctor and saying, oh, look, I'm feeling this way, that way. What
well, that's it. It's not.
Right.
And
yes.
It's my I just want to go back to acupuncture for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was a practicing acupuncture, you know, it's just very briefly, acupuncture is based on the premise that there are a number of energy channels that run through the body. Now, within along these channels, there are points, and they're the points that acupuncturists put the needles in for whatever treatment that they're doing. Now, if you cut that body open, you can see all the anatomy of the body, what's in it and everything, but you can't see those acupuncture channels. However, more and more research is done on this, and it does change the body's energy. It affects the way that the brain releases chemicals, so it does have an effect on people's wellness or illness. So even though you can't see them, so the social and emotional wounding is the same thing. You can cut a person open. You can't see their energy channels. You can't see where the emotions are stuck. However, it is stuck there. These deep psychic wounds that we've been carrying on for generations, ever since settlement, is just through all of us. And it takes specialist ways to remove that. Western medical science, because they can't see it, touch it, study it to death, it doesn't exist for them. However, you know, we know that it does, because traditionally, if you think back to our traditional ways, you know, there were people within our tribal groups who knew this, who knew how to use this energy. They were the healers in that group. And then, on the other end of the scale, the ones who also knew how to use this energy to do harm. And, you know, you can think of, I'm not sure what it is like with your origins, but yes, there were people who knew how to use that, and that was passed down, you know, so you were a healer, or you were somebody at the end of the... So you get what I'm saying here?
Yes, yes, I do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's very conflicting beliefs and views on this between the scientific world or colonial...
Oh, absolutely.
And what you're talking about, acupuncture, its origins are China, Chinese medicine healing, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
So, it's an ancient culture, Chinese, an ancient culture, ancient traditions, and ancient healing.
Yes.
And still, the Western medicine doctors and people here have difficulties in accepting it.
Yes.
Somewhat. So I think more and more of them are coming around, but that sort of stuff wasn't recognised at all, wasn't respected, wasn't valued until just recently.
And it's still not in a lot of circles. However, it is gaining more in popularity where people do feel that they have more choices, you know, over what sort of health treatment that they want. And again, you know, the traditional medicine form of treatment is based in medicinal herbs, not you know, not in any way drug therapy or anything like that. I had the opportunity, Tiger, to live in China for a few months when I was studying acupuncture, and the sense of community there, working in this what they call a traditional Chinese medicine hospital, which had didn't have any Western forms of treatment. If you needed an operation, you went to the Western medical hospital. But within the traditional Chinese medicine hospitals, only traditional Chinese medicine therapies were used, and that was acupuncture, that was medicinal herbs, that was the physical therapies like Chinese massage and all sorts of different things like that. Now, one day when we got to the hospital, we saw like people that we recognised as the doctors, the acupuncture doctors, they were sort of sweeping the floor and sweeping the hallways and everything. And when we walked up there, we said, what's going on? You know, thinking that, oh, maybe the cleaners have had the day off. But no, they didn't have cleaners as such. Everybody took their turns of, you know, keeping everything clean, of doing everything. It was such a community-based workplace, where everybody did what they could do.
Whatever
and
was
it
required.
Was an actual hospital. They did have inpatients as well.
Right.
Mm.
An interesting experience.
It was, yeah. And I just love that sense of community that they had there within this, you know, all the traditional ways and what they did.
Well, you'd be an ideal person to raise this thing that's going on in my head for some time. I'll get you to think about it over this song. What my concerns are today, here we are, 21st century, First Nations people in this country, not all that long ago, were the healthiest people on the planet, or one of the most healthiest people. We were the only people on the planet, you go back 100,000 years, because we're the oldest living race of people in the world. So we were, not all that long ago, the healthiest race of people on the planet. Here we are. If we're not the sickest, we're up there in the top three or top five. We're one of the sickest race of people on the planet. Now, 40 years ago, we started setting up services. Health services was one of them. My concern, what my challenge is in my head is we're following in the white man's footsteps insofar as dealing with our illnesses and our healing. It's largely drugs. It's largely a knife. Take a knife to you. There isn't enough. Now, mind you, the Australian Indigenous Doctors Association have, as members of their association, the traditional healers from remote communities, First Nations people, traditional healers. They recognise and value and respect them and honour them. So there is recognition at that level, but on the ground in our communities, we'll walk into our own health services and we'll be told about, you know, here's... this is where you go to get your children vaccinated. Oh, by the way, are your vaccinations up to date? Yeah, you need your flu shot. There's all this Western medicine stuff happening and not enough recognition and valuing of alternatives, of acupuncture, of homeopathy, of massage, and so on and so forth. I have a real concern about this, and I think because we're First Nations people, we should be embracing both of them. We should be looking at the alternative healing aspect of things. I want you to think about that and tell me what your thoughts are after this song by Archie Roach. My guest today is Gail Munn, a First Nations woman, a Goongari woman. And Gail's trained in counselling and health working and acupuncturist, but hasn't practiced for some 10 years or so. And before the song, I left Gail with one of my challenges or in my own head about how our health services, Aboriginal health services, medical services, my thoughts are we need to be embracing the massage and the acupuncturist and the homeopathic treatment and all these sorts of remedies, natural alternatives, because we come from a natural environment, natural bush medicines and stuff. Gail, what are your thoughts?
Well, yes. What I would really, you know, what would be really, really great is to see all of our AMSs as well embrace, you know, those alternative therapies that you say, rather than just having one form of treatment that doesn't always address those other issues, you know, like the emotional and social well-being now are being looked at, but we're still leaving out the soul and the spirit, you know, that connectedness to each other. So that's being... not really being addressed. And to make a person, you know, to have that total wellness, you've got to look at that. So it would be a really good thing if we could have those services in the AMSs where people do have access, where they have a bigger choice and not just be, you know, like sold down the stream that this one way, this Western medical model, one way is the only way. Because those of us who do embrace the natural side know that it's not. And, but I don't know if that's ever going to happen, but wouldn't it be just great to see that?
I think it may happen, like, you know, even if it's just massage for starters, because people know massage is very, very good. So introduce massage and then they can look at other things. But you're talking now like the main difference here being between Western medicine and some of the ancient cultures is a holistic approach.
Yes.
So is it fair to say then that Western medicine generally doesn't provide a holistic approach?
Well, of course it doesn't. Mm. It embraces like two, maybe three aspects of a person, of who you really are. Now, whether you believe that you've got a soul and a spirit is inconsequential, but we also, we know that there's a lot more going on than we're aware of. Mm. There's a lot more going on. You know, people's illnesses, their physical illnesses, can actually be brought about by those things that I talked about before, an interruption to the flow of energy through the body. And what interrupts that flow is trapped emotions that can't be expressed. You know, like, and we've been taught, you know, you don't behave like this, you can't do that, you can't do something else. When that oppression for all of those many generations that have kept people down, and lots of times people don't know what they're feeling, they can't express their emotions because they don't know what they are. They've buried them so far and so deep. And these are the things that aren't being addressed in the Western medical treatments. It's just, look at the symptoms, look at the diseases, and they're not, you know, they're not looking at the whole person. They're looking at specific diseases and disease states and conditions.
Now, this is not unusual in Western society or the dominant culture. It's not unusual because right across the board there is a very tunnel vision view on almost everything, to the extent where there's a term, siloed, you know, managed in a silo way, where you have little silos of little programs and projects, but there's nothing linking them all together. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yes, absolutely. And the costs of natural therapies treatments too, because they're not, under Medicare, you know, that's prohibitive for most of our people. They can't afford to go and have the treatment that they would prefer to have. So there's that aspect of as well. You know, the money comes into that.
So that's a way of being a deterrent and restricting people. It's almost like education. If you have the funds to go in and get the best education around within private schools and what have you, you can do it. It's just like health and healing and well-being. If you've got the money to be able to go into the health food shop and buy the top-of-the-range supplements or food, organic food, whatever it is, so, you know, you can't claim on Medicare some of those alternative healing practitioners, can you?
No.
So it's to me, it's a way of controlling and trying to denigrate or just maybe just control.
Well, that's what it looks like. I really don't want to get into the politics of it.
No, not at all. Leave that to me. I'll do the politics.
There is a lot of control there, I just can't believe like the Newman government has just pulled so much funding out of preventative strategies. You know that are out there. You know, it's closed sexual
health
down.
Promotions and stuff.
All of that sort of stuff.
We've got the worst health going, and they go and take the health promotions budgets and all the staff and sack them all.
Yep.
How can we make any improvements if we don't got health promotions?
Exactly. So, and, you know, that's going to be down the line, that's going to be a bigger cost because people who are not educated in these areas don't know about it, so they're going to get sicker. Hello. The hospital system's in a, you know, it's just all over the place. It's a sort of a system that's in crisis, shall we say.
Yes, it's in crisis. Yes. Certainly is, no question about that. All right. Now, you run workshops, or you've got a workshop coming up, but you work with people in communities, or community groups, community people, individuals. You've got a workshop coming up. Tell us what you do so that people might want to follow you up and engage in some of your workshops.
Okay, so this the one that I've got coming up, the next one that I've got coming up is on Friday the 26th of April, the day after Anzac Day. And it's really more aimed at people who work with people, you know, and it's around this lateral violence and lateral healing. Now, we've got a lot of these amazing health workers and people out there who are working in the community, in these community service organisations, and sometimes I call them the walking wounded, you know, because they don't know. They haven't healed to that depth because there's nothing out there to teach them how to really, you know, be the best that they can be. So they still revert back into this, the lateral violence in the workplace, and it's very rife in workplaces that I've been into where people just really aren't happy, you know, like, and all that creates that bad feeling and that energy that we were talking about, and it does affect people. So it's really aimed at those people, any people who are in service organisations who would like to know a little bit more about this and what they can do towards this lateral healing. Now, it's a two-hour info session. It is interactive. You don't just get me standing up there talking at you. What you'll get out of that session is that you'll, you know, just learn some simple tricks and tips and ways that you can start to overcome and recognise this lateral violence, you know, like what it is and how we can move around it and how you can start sort of like getting really curious. When you see somebody blow up next time in front of you and you react to it, don't blame the person because that's just the person's behaviour. See if you can look underneath the behaviour, you know, and see the person that's there. Because everybody is a loving, kind, caring human being. It's just that the behaviours that they engage in are something that we don't like, and that's what we react to. We react to the behaviours. So you'll get some tips about learning how not to react to these behaviours and just, you know, be able to handle situations a little bit more appropriately.
All right.
So if it's anyone who's a member of any Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander community group or service organisation, and again, just when you see those behaviours, just think, get really curious too. I wonder what wound that person has that they would act like that, you know, because it is a deep emotional wound that they've carried, and it might not even be theirs. It's, as I said, it's ancestral, that they've grown up in an environment where that behaviour was normal, so, and they haven't learned yet that, that there's a natural reason for it, and that is that history of oppression. So once people get to understand that, then they're aware of it, and then they can start to take steps to change it.
Yes. What does it cost for this workshop on the 26th, and how can people contact you?
So it's $30. They can go to my website, which is just my name, www.gailmunn.com.
Gail with a Y?
With a Y, G-A-Y-L-E, munn.com.
Okay, and find out details there.
I'll leave my phone number too if anybody wants to give me a call. 0402 931 375.
All right. Now it's good that you're doing this sort of stuff because there's a big need out there. And when you say you look at people's behaviours, sometimes it's diet that creates a behaviour. Take the red soft drink with the
Absolutely.
Red cordial, right? The
yep.
sugar.
Yep.
The behaviour that generates in some of our kids.
Yep, that's right. All those chemicals that are being fed.
We've got a caller on the line. Let's have a yarn. Welcome to
Good
Let's
morning,
Talk.
Tiger. Good morning, Gail. It's Poet Dave again, Tiger.
Dave, how are you, mate? What's happening?
Good. I'd just like to ask Gail, has she got a public forum, like one that a single person can donate to, or has she got something on her internet page that a single person can refer to? Because I do suffer from anger at times, and I'd be quite interested in having a look at her system to maybe help me out of it.
Yeah, well, have you got access to the website?
I have. Is there any chance of maybe popping it on the web page, Tiger? Because I'm driving at the moment, so.
Yeah, mate, we can get it to you. Yeah.
Okay. No, that'd be good.
Well, Tiger, if there's any way... I'm sorry I didn't get your name.
Dave.
Dave. Yeah.
Hi, Dave.
Hi.
If there's any way that you could leave that with the station, or you can give me a ring later on, or you can, you know, make contact through the station. Dave,
yeah. Yep. Just call us up here at the station. There. We'll get the details to you, Dave. No worries.
Yeah. That'd be great.
So just to answer your question, Dave, yes, I do like what is called spiritual life coaching that deals with those types of things. Because having had problems myself in the past, you know, and gone through the whole psychology trip just didn't work for me. So I went off on other paths that I found were more effective and more holistic.
All right, Dave.
That'd be great. The other thing I just wanted to say is too, I think a lot of the problems we've not been able to get the holistic thing out there is that the major drug and medical companies tend to put a bad line on it for themselves.
They're propaganda machines, eh? The propaganda machines, mate. Yep.
It comes back to that mighty dollar machine again.
That's right.
It's the money, Dave. You can't, they cannot patent a plant, you see.
No.
So there's no money in growing plants because they haven't got a patent on it. Don't get me started on the drug company.
All right. Thank you so much, Gail. Thank you, Tiger.
Good on you.
Get in contact.
Yeah, buddy. Thanks for your call, Dave. Right on, mate. Yes, the drug companies, Gail, is another story again. I mean, look at some of the plants. I mean, the comfrey plant, yeah, they're supposed to be illegal and different. I mean, it's happening more and more often. You can't get seeds anymore. They're patented and stuff like this. It's rubbish stuff, you know?
Yeah, and you've got Monsanto out there who want to control the world with only having seeds that are good ones, all genetically modified.
Yes.
Said, don't get me started on that.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll be here for days.
It's a crazy system. That doesn't encourage, well, it's about control and doesn't encourage these alternatives or options. But I've also just been informed by Allah, services here in Brisbane has just been closed down by the state government as well. And that's for HIV treatment and people that were suffering of different addictions and things like that. By Allah was a very important place, you know, very important. And it's just been shut down. Sexual health clinic and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's just madness. And, you know, as I said, with no education, what's the outcome then for the community? Well, not just the individual, but the community. Of course, there's,
that's right.
You know, negative outcomes for the individuals, but the bigger picture, yeah.
Not good. Spirituality is all very much the core, the soul, the spirit of people. I think there's a spiritual void in this country. I suppose our people, there's a high degree of spirituality among our people because it's part and parcel of our being, of our makeup. But this country, generally speaking, do you think there's a spiritual void there? What are your thoughts? And then there's a different sort of spirituality. You've got this mainstream Christianity that comes in, and it seems to be a bit, I don't know, I can't sort of, I don't know. Tell us about spirituality. What are your thoughts?
Well, spirituality and religion, sort of, in my mind, can be complete strangers. You know, religion is dogma. It's a belief system. Spirituality is understanding that we're all connected and we have our different beliefs, we have our different ways of doing things, but we honour the differences, you know, that are in people. We honour their belief systems. You know, we don't tear them down for what they believe in. We don't ostracise them for what they believe in. And yes, to answer your question, there is a spiritual void because people do not have the understanding that, you know, we're all parts in this web. That's the true spirituality. Every person is a part of a web. And what we do to the web, we do to each other. So it's like that. Everybody needs to just be connected, you know, like these heart connections that we have. The humanitarian traits that we have within ourselves, which is love, compassion, understanding, tolerance, inner peace and promoting peace, not the conflict and the war and stuff that we have like within ourselves, within our communities, within our organisations, all of that, you know, leads to people with guns killing themselves. So the place to start is within your own. So it's a deeper connection that is what I see as spirituality.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that doesn't matter whether you're a Christian, whether you're Jewish.
Or whether you're just an old black fellow who doesn't believe in any of that sort of stuff, but is still a spiritual person and believes
absolutely.
In a creator, a higher power. Yeah?
Absolutely. Mm. And it's that sort of thing, you know, how we try to intellectualise things and put them into context to teach them to something, you know, like... and.
Intellectualizing.
Some of the best lessons that I've learned have been from people who don't have pieces of paper
that's
on
right.
the wall, who
that's
don't
right.
haven't had a formal education.
I like that comment of yours there, try to intellectualize things. That's a killer. Look, I've got a caller on the line. Hello, welcome to Let's Talk.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, very well. What's your name again?
My name is Cheryl.
Cheryl, yep. What would you like to say?
Hi, just
Cheryl.
Hello, how are you?
No, I'm fine, thank you.
I just want to talk to you in regards to vaccinations and all of that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I actually received a vaccination in 2010. It was the H1N1 flu, swine flu vaccination.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I have been fighting ever since to get back to good health.
Really? And so what makes you think it was that vaccination?
Because I was totally healthy prior to that. I played basketball 3 times a week. I was working full time. I was planning to go on my long service leave and take a trip around Australia. All of those things become very hard for me. I was happened probably between a week to 2 weeks. I started noticing symptoms like blindness. I was finding it very hard driving my car overnight because of it was like I was
affecting your sight, was it?
Seeing halos around lights and things like that. Mm. I started getting spasms within my body.
Prior to this, have you had any problems with medication prior to this? I mean, did you just go along thinking, well, it's a anti-flu shot. Well, it should be safe.
I'd never had a flu shot before in my life. But because I worked in a public arena around children and things like that, they were really pushing the issue about getting the vaccination.
Right.
I was very, right to the time I got it, I was very hesitant, but I still went ahead. And it was after that, you know, like my life has been hell. Yeah, it's been pretty hard going.
And what did you take it to your doctor and say, listen, I'm sure it's this flu shot that's done this. What are you going to do about it?
Yeah, and I've been to, you know, I've spent thousands and thousands of dollars on specialists and whatever. I went to a neurologist who looked at me, took one look at me and asked me to walk in a straight line, follow my finger with your eyes, and then proceeded to tell me that I had a thing called Meijer's syndrome.
And how do you get that? What's that?
Well, they don't know.
Right, yeah.
And I'm out of that box. So I'm out of that little square box, so nobody knows where I got it from. But this is the thing. I couldn't even get work comp. I got the needle at my workplace. I couldn't even get compensation through that. I ended up basically getting the flick from my workplace after being there for 15 years.
What a hell of an experience. Now, have you met other people that have experienced these sorts of things at all?
I have done a lot of research. I've had 2 sisters who actually got the same shot that year and got very sick in different ways. I'm the one who probably got all the other symptoms, but they got pretty sick. One of my sisters got sick for about 2 years. She found it very hard getting through the process, but I'm a bit of a researcher, so I've gone all of the holistic medications. I go to homeopaths. And,
yeah. What a hell of a listen. You got something to say,
Cheryl,
there, Gail?
Yeah, Cheryl. There's I don't know if you've been on to this particular website. It's called it's www.
Okay, I'll just write it down.
Yep. WDDTY.com. Now, that website is, that stands for What Doctors Don't Tell You.
Right.
Now, this is a website where they have, like, lots of good information there.
Okay.
And if you want to leave your contact details with the radio station, I can certainly put you in touch with somebody who does frequent vaccination awareness talks. And, she will be able to let you know when the next one is on. And this is one thing, like, and when you go to your doctor, if he's talking about vaccination, ask him exactly what is in that vaccination.
That's right. And
What are the likely side effects for you?
Mm-hmm.
Can he guarantee that nothing is going to happen to you as a result of this vaccination?
The answer will be no.
Get it in writing.
The answer will be no, though. None of them will give you a guarantee. Cheryl, as always...
Get it in writing. If they say no...
Yes. Yeah, get that in writing.
Yeah.
Good
but then
point.
I guess it's a hard thing to prove. But yeah, just
I've
knowing
got your
what's
phone
in
number.
Those vaccinations, because, again, it's... yes...
It is close to news time, Gail.
Okay.
Cheryl, I have to go. I've got your
the
phone number. Your phone number's come up on the screen here, Cheryl. So,
all right, then.
We don't have to exchange anything. I've got it already. I'll pass it on to Gail.
Okay.
And you can expect a call from Gail.
And I thank you very much. Okay.
Thank you for your call, and good luck with trying to get well. It's a hell of a pathway to go with the pressure on from...
You have to be tough.
Yes.
You have to move on.
Yes. All right. Well, good luck with
okay.
it. Thank you for your
thank
call.
You.
Bye. Yes, one of those many. There's many, many people like that out there, Gail.
Yeah.
Too many.
Yeah.
Too many. Look, it's time for news. Thank you very much for joining us today. It's been a pretty good chat, don't you think?
Thank you, Tiger. Yeah, for the opportunity.
No worries. You have a great day and good luck with your work. It's good to see we need more people out there doing this sort of stuff.
Thank you, Tiger.
You have a good day.
Soon.
Yep.
Okay, bye.
Bye now.